You're listening to Monday Morning Live, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League.
All right. Well, welcome to another edition of Monday Morning Live, the noon webinar. I guess I should have thought about the name we created. Should never tie a date and a day of the week to a particular thing because we're not really morning anymore. We are on Monday, so that's good. I am Matt Bach, Director of Communications with the Michigan Municipal League. Very pleased today to be joined by members of our legislative team. We got Chris Heckbarth, Jennifer Rigtrink, and John Lamacchia. Thank you all for joining us. Just a reminder that if you do have questions for us on any of the topics, feel free to post them in the chat on this stream, and we'll answer them as we go or at the end. So I just wanted to jump right into it. Go ahead,
just remember,
Chris.
Just remember, Matt, it is still Monday morning in the Western UP.
Oh, that's true. That's right. And all the counties bordering Wisconsin are in the different time zone. So that's cool. Thank you, Chris, for that delightful information. So let's start off with talking with Chris and John about the federal stuff. We've been very active on trying to get an additional stimulus package to aid our communities, have direct local funding to our communities. Tell us where we're at with that and what's kind of the next steps.
Well, obviously, a lot of the conversations in Washington right now are trying to figure out what and when the next stimulus takes place. You saw some movement in Congress this last week on fixing some of the payroll protection program issues, some of the concerns about timing on that and when individual businesses have to report and what they have to report. So that was kind of the first movement on that topic of what's next. You're still seeing a lot of conversation about what are the component pieces. We consistently are pushing to our congressional delegation, to our contacts in the White House and in congressional leadership. It's direct, flexible assistance for local units of government of all sizes in the state. So that's been our big push. We're getting a lot of positive reaction to that. Again, a lot of it is surrounding timing. What's the time frame on that? What is the amount on that? What's happening with the existing dollars that are out there? We continue to work with the administration on that as they work through guidance that the U.S. Treasury has put out. So I think, there's sometime this month, we'll see more. There's not a real good sense, I don't think, right now of timing. We do see, and John can help with this, we've had a number of different conversations with National League of Cities and other partners in Congress about different bipartisan efforts taking place in the House and the Senate on different ways to get aid directly to local government. I know, John, you had a conversation with some of the folks working with Senator Booker and the proposal he's working on.
Yeah, we have had, regularly scheduled weekly calls with NLC, and usually it happens more often than that. But what we are seeing is, as Chris, you alluded to, is momentum at the federal level around aid to states and local governments, while initially met with some pushback from some of the Senate leadership, has really started to morph into some form of support, right? And the question really is going to be, what does it look like at the end of the day? Now, there's everything from the HEROES Act, which is out there, which we've kind of discussed and talked about in its entirety, is likely not to pass, but components of that, some of which are very beneficial to us as local units of government, we hope to stay in there. And I think that the chances of that happening are increasing. I won't say that they're likely just yet, but they're increasing based on what we've seen from proposals from our own Congressman Kilby and Upton, what Senator Menendez has talked about and others have talked about, really coalescing around how we provide this direct aid to communities and the states. We know what's happening at the state level. They've been very direct about it over the past a couple of weeks in terms of their budget deficit both this year and next year. And then we have been very direct about our members' need as well as many other states. And so I think this is all, adding to the conversation and the momentum that is building, and we need to continue to move forward with that both as members and as an organization.
And Matt, I think you saw last week we had Mayor Barnett and a group of other mayors testifying virtually before Congress This week, I know the governor is having some conversations with Congress in a hearing in the House. So it is the topic on everyone's mind. It is just the shape and timing of it that I think we're all working on. But our member engagement is critically important to keep up throughout this period and the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, right. And Chris, and when we talk about member engagement, right, and the reason we keep pushing so hard as staff for you to engage is because also while there's been building momentum, there's also been building opposition. And so we have seen some groups come out and push back against the broader concept of what's going on at the federal level, the $3 trillion package, as well as what's also talking about assistance to states and local governments, because it gets coined way too often as a bailout. And if we were all on the screen right now and I asked anybody to raise their hand that was looking for a bailout, my guess is nobody would raise their hand, right? This is not a bailout. This is a time of crisis. But we have seen our communities' revenues decimated as a result of the pandemic. And we need to continue to highlight the reasons why. And it's not because of mismanagement. It's not because we need a bailout. It's because we need to be able to continue to provide services as local units of government and ensure that those small businesses and medium-sized businesses that make up our Main Street and our downtowns continue to have a place to operate and be successful. And that needs to be done in partnership with the federal government, the state government, and business groups alike.
Members need to realize that this is something, these national talking points, this conversation about bailout, with the air quotes, it's trickling down into the state. I mean, we're seeing it. We've already seen a legislative resolution turned in the House on this. It is an issue that's becoming a conversation that those who are opposed to state and local aid are trying to drive into the media. So the more you can engage and talk with your member of Congress about what's actually happening, the costs that are increasing, the existing revenues that are going down, the more they'll understand that this isn't about a bailout. This is about keeping your community alive.
And I should mention that we are part of the National League of Cities, Cities Are Essential campaign, which is all about this issue. I just shared a link in the chat to a link to that where there's tools and resources that our members can use, sample letters that they can send their congressional leaders, a tweet, sample tweets, sample Facebook posts, and that's all in there. And that's really very helpful to us right now, as like John and Chris mentioned, as the opposition gets more organized, we need to keep the pressure on from a member perspective to our leaders to get something done, because, you know, obviously this isn't a bailout of our members. We know that the challenges they're faced with even before this, with the broken municipal finance system, and now having this coronavirus pandemic on top of that, really is kind of the double whammy for our members long term. That there's going to be a lot of pain and a lot of tough decisions are going to have to be made unless there is some kind of federal help and support.
Matt, and so, we should give credit where credit is due too. I mean, we've been very direct with membership about really needing to lean on Republican members of Congress, and Congressman Fred Upton, not only, as I had mentioned previously, co-sponsored the bill with Congressman Kilby, but also recently published an op-ed about the importance of making sure that we keep both states and local governments fiscally solvent. And that's the type of leadership that we are looking for. He deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think we can continue to look to him and lean on him as a partner moving forward. And hopefully he can lean on his fellow colleagues to do the right thing at the end of the day, whatever shape it may take, whether that is part of an individual package or a broader package of aid. The inclusion is what's going to be important. And he has really helped lead the way, not only for Michigan from the Republican caucus side, but really nationally. And we should be proud of that and recognize
that. That's a really good point. That was really encouraging to see, you know, a Republican member of Congress come out and say that, because obviously it's going to take a bipartisan effort to get anything done at the federal level. Let's move to the state issue, the state level right now. We got a number of different things going on. I believe the legislature, at least one of the chambers, is in this week. What's kind of the big thing? I know they're working on the budget. What's the latest?
So there's a lot of conversation. In fact, I was just getting a text message from the budget office right now. A lot of conversations, as I mentioned, on, you know, what is the governor going to do with the existing $3 billion deficit the state's facing? You've seen leadership, the Senate Majority Leader, the governor both talking about what can they do to make the adjustments that are necessary without impacting schools. The governor specifically highlighted local governments and police and fire as priorities as she's looking at how to make these corrections that need to be made to the state budget. At the same time, they're also looking at how soon are we going to see something from the feds? You know, you're starting to see a little tension from the legislature saying, we can't wait for a Hail Mary from the federal government. We need to address this now. I expect we'll see more this week from the governor in terms of what's going to happen. What are they going to put out there as solutions? Are they going to put any solutions out? Will they do a negative executive order for the budget? We've heard the state budget director talk about, maybe this whole concept of getting the budget done by July 1st needs to be put on hold this year. And maybe we take things month by month. Again, with the state delaying sales use and withholding payments for businesses and the delay of the state income tax deadline until the middle of July, that means we won't see any revenue from those sources coming in until, August. So any revenue estimate that we have right now is missing that whole giant component of revenue for the state. So I think we're going to be looking at a long summer in terms of a budget creation, and we may see some short-term measures. And a lot of the conversation right now is going to center around how does the state spend its $3 billion of CARES Act funding, and what are the ways that they can get at that money?
Chris, I have been told that the governor does have a press conference scheduled today at 3. Have you heard anything? If you expect her to get into the budget at all, or is she going to mostly probably respond to some of the protests and things that happened over the weekend? Do you have any feeling one way or the other?
I think, and I'll let Jen and John pipe in with intel that they've got. But I think what we're hearing right now is there's a lot of the press conference will focus on kind of next steps. We obviously don't know the exact script she's going to go through, but we're hearing some things about additional regions, additional changes. I don't know, John, have you got any more direct insight?
Nothing specific. They're as tight-lipped as they usually are about what their specific plan is, which sometimes leads to a little bit of frustration, probably both for us and our members. I can imagine. Excuse me, proper coughing technique too, just so everybody noticed. But I do think, again, as I have talked about before, if we look at what the progression of her orders have been over the course of the last couple of months, June 1, where we sit today, really made sense from a calendar standpoint and from an executive order standpoint to see some gradual loosening again, and probably more than just the northern regions of the state. And I think based on what I've been told and other information we've picked up, is that is where we tend to think it will be going, but we'll know more at 3 o'clock, obviously.
All right, yeah, we'll stay tuned for that for sure. Talk a little bit about the budget. We do have another webinar with the Michigan Department of Treasury scheduled on Monday, Tuesday, June 9th. We changed also Mondays to Tuesday, that's where my head went. So it is Tuesday, June 9th, I believe at 2 p.m. Do we have some feelings of what they're going to be talking about? Hopefully giving a latest update on the budget situation. We had the revenue estimated conference a couple weeks ago. So, the picture is becoming more clear. It's a very bleak picture indeed. What do you expect from that webinar for the Treasury next week, Chris?
Well, I think we'll see, a lot more of the Treasury's effort, especially their local government division's effort, trying to provide guidance to local units. We've had some recent executive orders, one of them dealing with July boards of review. We've had some things coming out like that. So I think we'll kind of get the next step of budget. Who knows if we'll get anything from the governor this week, like I said, on a negative executive order that could tie in. Those are the kind of conversations, but I would expect that this webinar is going to be, again, more best practices, more guidance for communities, and a little bit of a flavor of updates as we get into, again, how some of these new executive orders will impact and some of the changes that are going on a daily basis with the administration.
What's generally the mood right now, Chris, over the budget? You know, we saw some kind of exchange back and forth between the governor and leadership. It seems like things are a little tense right now.
Yeah, again, I think you've got a situation where the legislature is looking at a problem facing them right now and asking the administration, look, you've known this is there. We've got this problem. We need to address it. We need to address it quickly. The administration's looking at it, I think, through the lens of, yes, we've got a big problem. We've also got a giant unknown in terms of what our revenue looks like and what does the reopening of the economy mean. So how drastic of measures do we take in the short term, or do we measure some things out? So I think that's really what's going on right now, is how much time can the administration buy to allow some things to get back in play and to get some revenues flowing again, see what happens with the federal government. And that's kind of colliding up against the legislature's effort to say, look, we got to put a tourniquet on this right now and shore some things up. You're seeing some of that play out with the administration's move to furloughing thousands of employees on Fridays. So we've seen that, I know, in our work with different departments. We've been held up in our work on Fridays just trying to get answers on things. So today is a big backlog of response. I know Jen's had conversations with some groups, John, myself. So we're all getting feedback today from everything we've been asking since last Thursday.
Wow, that's interesting that it affects us too. Their furloughs obviously impacts who you can call and what days you can call them. Jen, I want to talk to you a little bit about, I know you're working on a couple different things. One, there's some movement afoot with the Liquor Control Commission regarding some rule changes in response to the pandemic. Can you explain what that is and some upcoming events that we have to try to help our members through this?
Sure, Matt. So we did do a blog on the Inside 208 a week ago. The Liquor Control Commission came out with kind of a streamlined process for outdoor service area applications and the process of getting approved for that, whether you are trying to, an establishment is trying to increase their service area outdoors or just establish a new service area. And so we are working with the Liquor Control Commission right now. We're going to be doing a webinar this Thursday at noon. More information will be coming out on that. But really, so they can walk through the process, allow our members to ask some questions about the process and just clarify anything. And then they established a resource webpage, has all of the applications, as well as a frequently asked questions document. And so we're just gonna have them on so they can, again, talk to our members, have the opportunity to ask some questions. Separately, and from the Liquor Control Commission, as we've had some liquor legislation that's been introduced, specifically House Bill 5781, dealing with social districts, social drinking districts, where a municipality would be able to opt in to establishing this designation, and then within that having a common area where establishments within a certain proximity, right now the bill says adjacent to, would be able to have a larger space outdoors for people to go, and they'd be able to serve them there. That legislation, we have been providing feedback on it. It is, a work in progress. I've heard back from one of our internal policy committees that I shared it with for feedback, looking at in the short term, going the outdoor service area route with the Liquor Control Commission until things would be worked out with this, and or how do you service your different businesses down in your downtown if they're not adjacent to the common area. So just things we are still working out on that as it moves forward.
Thank you, Jen. I just posted, we don't have the, a couple of people asked if we have registration links to the Treasury webinar next week and Jen's webinar that she just mentioned with the Liquor Control Commission, which is Thursday. We don't have those yet. We'll probably be posting those today. You can find them on our events calendar. I just put a link to that on there. In the meantime, we just got some breaking news from MERS News Service about the state moving to stage for phase four. Can someone explain a little bit what that means?
I'm happy to jump in there, mainly because I just went and pulled up the page that says, well, here's what's in in phase four. So I will be interested to see, because I want to add a little bit of a caveat to this, in the sense that as the governor moved Northern Michigan to phase four, there were some components of phase five in there, particularly as you thought about the restaurant and bar aspect. And the reason I bring that up the most is because if you just look at the words on paper that are in phase four, it talks about it being available for takeout, delivery, and drive-through only, versus phase five, which is available for dine-in with some additional safety measures and guidelines, which could be, you know, reduced capacity and some of the other things that we saw in Northern Michigan. So I will be curious to see exactly, you know, how she handles that. But I think the most important component to this is, based on the metrics that she is using, we are going from a flattening stage to an improving stage. And as we get into that improving stage, you know, things, you know, such as education become much more of a topic of discussion, and their ability to meet in small groups, which might lead to in-learning capabilities this fall. You know, the things such as social distancing and face coverings are still going to be an important part of this. Gatherings will still likely be limited. I don't want to speculate whether that will be 10 or a higher number. And then some of the other issues we will have to watch is, you know, what happens in our workspaces, right? Where in phase four, it really talks about offices being open. But it says in here specifically, remote work still required where feasible. So, you know, those are going to be the types of things that us as local units and those businesses in our communities will have to pay very close attention to this afternoon. And I'm sure we will be immediately engaged in trying to get you the best information possible, maybe even looking at doing an additional webinar as we have in the past on this. But again, what I see here in the best news being is the governor's clear recognition that we are moving out of the flattening stage and into the improving stage, which is all the direction that we want to go. And clearly it's suggested that we are going right now.
Yeah, and I would think, you know, if they are starting to reopen some more things, what Jen was just talking about with the restaurants and that type of thing, that'll be really important if there's some activity happening on that. So and hopefully for our webinar on Thursday with the Liquor Control Commission, we can have some more details on that. So of course, the announcement from MERS did say that governor would be talking about this, the phase four, during the news conference today at 3 o'clock, which I encourage our members to watch. I know the Michigan State Police Facebook page usually has a link. My local TV station has been running those live, so there's a number of different ways. I'm sure the Detroit newspapers will be having it on there too, so a lot of ways for people to watch that. That's important. I did see we got a question at the very onset of the discussion here asking, what about House Bill 5705? Does it have any chance of passing? I don't know what that is. So if any of you guys can enlighten me, that would be great. Chris raises his hand. You get it.
So, you know, this ties in a little bit with some of the broader conversation. And for those of you, this gives me my chance for the gratuitous plug of Inside 208, our legislative blog. So if those of you who are watching haven't subscribed yet, please go to that radio button on the right-hand side of our main page, Inside 208, and that is our legislative blog site. You can enter your email address. On Friday, I did an update regarding some of the efforts that are going on right now to provide relief for small businesses and residents with regard to summer tax bill. It's obviously a huge issue for local units of government, especially cities that rely on general operating revenues from the summer tax bill. House Bill 5705 would have provided, during that period of time where the governor had said you could not even travel to your second home, your cottage up north, those few weeks that EO was in place, Representative Yarick turned in that House Bill 5705 to provide pro rata relief for property taxes for the amount of time that you were unable to access your cottage. My guess is that bill does not move right now. As an alternative, there are two bills being discussed, 5761 and 5810. Again, if you look at our Inside 208 blog, you can see kind of what my write-up on that. The bill started originally as a way to provide penalty and interest relief for a period of time for taxpayers with regard to their summer tax bill if they weren't able to pay it. We explained to the sponsor and the proponents the devastating impact that proposal would have, because it would essentially give people get out of jail free card to not pay their summer tax bill, which would be a real problem, especially for local governments and schools. To his credit, the sponsor and the bill proponents said, okay, yeah, we understand. Okay, so let's look at some other ways to get at this. We really let him know how important it is that cash flow for local governments from this summer tax bill is critical. And so we've shifted now in direction where county treasurers have been brought in, and they've said, what if we did an early settlement, delinquency settlement, and create a path for those who are experiencing hardship, and we have some criteria for what that hardship is, still being fine-tuned. Those folks could come in, and then local units would be able to share that information with the county, who would then settle up with the local units in the fall, as opposed to waiting until, you know, May or June for the normal settlement time period. And so we're working on that, trying to figure out, again, make sure the system works, make sure it's easy to administer for local governments, make sure that the funding is there in a very timely manner for local governments and schools, and that we know, you know, who qualifies very clearly and can understand that. And so that's some of the conversation taking place. The first hearing was on that, those two bills this last week. We expect them to come up again this week. There'll be new drafts put together. We met with the counties and the townships and schools and treasury and sponsors late last week. So we expect a lot more to be coming in the next week or two on this.
So yeah, you've been working really hard on that, Chris. We appreciate that. Before we get into questions, there was one other issue I wanted to ask Jen about, and we have been getting some calls from our members about the recreational marijuana revenues. And I think the questions are basically like, when are we going to start seeing our checks for the communities that have decided to go ahead and have recreational marijuana businesses in their communities? So Jen, what can you tell us about what you're hearing on that?
Unfortunately, we're hearing that they are not taking in the revenues, and they won't be in for another year or two. So the likelihood of our members seeing any revenue from that excise tax is not going to probably be anywhere in the near future.
And Jen, just on that, once you go through the couple of carve outs that happen before any distributions take place to communities.
Right. So first and foremost, the legislation or the law makes that the state is made whole for the administration of the overall program. Then $20 million for up to 2 years goes to research and development. And then if or what is left over is run through the formula where our folks would get 15%. And then that 15% is also allocated on a proportional basis of how many retail I'm forgetting the other license type name of the micro business. You know, it's proportional to how many of those establishments are within the county that you're located.
So we're way down the stream as far as that comes to our community. So patience, I guess, is going to be the key word in there for that. And now I'll turn it over to Betsy to see if we have any questions for our team. I know I did ask the one that was asked on the onset about the one bill. Is there any other things out there that are on our members' minds?
You guys have covered everything that's come in so far.
Okay. All right. Anything other updates or anything you guys want to provide before we sign off?
No, Matt, thank you. Again, we're starting to see legislative activity pick up, a lot of conversations about policy initiatives, legislators having work group. The governor obviously has a whole series of work groups. We have staff participating in those in terms of reopening the economy, reopening the state. So, you know, look for more information from us in the coming weeks as we're able to participate in those and bring in more information on what's happening.
Yeah, Jen, I did see a question I think you could probably address regarding what's the updates on the parks opening plan. I know that's an issue you've been following really closely.
Yep, so I did participate on the administration's work group for outdoor recreation, which include parks, marinas, campgrounds. There was a recommendations report put together from that stakeholder group, which had over 100 participants. And I will be doing a blog today and posting that, and posting the plan that was given to the governor and per staff. But just remind folks that that is a recommendations. There's nothing binding in that. And a lot of it pulled from best practices that other states are using, the CDC. And we will get we'll get that posted so our members can take a look at that.
Great. Thank you, Jen. I will say, I just posted a link to our next Monday Morning Live, which is Monday, June 8th at noon. So we will continue a lot of these conversations. Got another quick question here in from Michael Kane to all of our panelists. What impacts do we expect to see from the Midland area flooding? Do we have any update or thoughts on that?
Yes. Oh, Mike, really good question, because when we've talked about this in a variety of ways, right, whether that be infrastructure, whether that be climate change, whether that just be liability of a municipality, there's been a number of issues us as an organization have been working on, that this incident in the Midland area, and even some of what's happened, I was just reading about in Traverse City in recent days, that could really, again, highlight some of the need that is out there both for investment and for policy change. Hard to predict exactly what's going to happen, but I do think the most important thing that could have come out of this is a renewed sense of interest in both investment in infrastructure, how that infrastructure is maintained long-term, who maintains it, right? And then what the roles and responsibilities are around that and how we pay for it. So those are the types of things that I'm looking for. I already have a ongoing conversation right now. Part of, again, much like Chris talking with the budget office in the middle of this, that I was in the middle of on some of this infrastructure in a broader sense. So hopefully we'll continue to highlight that and see some progress made as a result of that situation.
Matt, I just want
to go ahead, Chris.
Also for members, as we talked last time about the Consensus Revenue Estimating Conference, done a blog on some of the data that Treasury had put out on what members should expect for the coming year for their constitutional revenue sharing payments. Added into that, we had some of the staff at SEMCOG did a pretty good analysis of kind of check by check, since those revenue sharing checks come bimonthly, and how those, you know, how you can compare each month with last year's, so you can look, especially with regard to your fiscal year, on a per capita basis. So some very helpful information as you're doing budget planning in terms of what is the impact of the state's revenue declines mean for your constitutional revenue sharing payments. Please check out that blog as well.
Great, thank you. All right, well, thank you, everybody. I'll end on a humorous note. One of our Facebook commenters said, John gets the award, Zoom award, for the best lighting, set design, and haircut. So good job for you, John. I need a haircut desperately. So I will concede that to John. So thank you, everybody, for joining us.
I finally broke down and let my wife take the scissors and the clippers to it. And it's maybe the best decision I've made with her other than getting married. So
that's very kind.
We're off to a good
start. Your wife did that? I thought it was the kids.
No.
I think he would have a bunch of bandages on his face if he let the kids do it. Right. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again. Feel free to tune into our webinars. We do have, a Serve My City, a town hall type discussion tomorrow, which is one of our new programs called Serve My City, which is helping our members navigate all the different grants and different programs that are out there for funding during the corona in response to the coronavirus pandemic. And that's going to be a really good conversation with our staff and our friends at PSC Consultants. So that's tomorrow. That is on our events calendar. You can sign up for that right now. And then we have the other webinar Thursday, and then we'll be back Monday for Monday Morning Live. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a good day.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.